Today is Monday, August 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up, correspondent William Gallo talks about North Korea's reaction to military exercises in South Korea.
If the U.S. and South Korea go ahead with these exercises, they not only will continue to test short-range missiles, but they've hinted that possibly they could resume nuclear and ICBM tests.
Also ahead, President Donald Trump reacts to deadly mass shootings, and we get an update on protests in Hong Kong. It's all on today's International Edition. Our top story today, a general strike paralyzed Hong Kong today, preventing people from getting to work and forcing the cancellation of more than 200 flights. The city's embattled leader, Beijing-backed Carrie Lam, said protesters were pushing the city to the verge of an extremely dangerous situation. Yesterday, the marchers staged sometimes violent protests on multiple fronts. Using a new tactic, scores of protesters built barricades at a location, and when riot police arrived, a small group would stay behind to face the tear gas. Scores of others escaped through the public transit network to a new protest point. Reporter Erin Hale is in Hong Kong. She spoke with my colleague, Kate Pound Dawson, about the day's events.
Today is still ongoing. There were protests in seven districts across Hong Kong. They are held in support of a strike that was called today to protest the government. Most of the rallies began peacefully, but most of them are now becoming somewhat violent with clashes between police and protesters. Tear gas has been fired in multiple locations across Hong Kong, and confrontation is ongoing, and it looks like it will continue until late into the night. Police said at 5:30 p.m. that 82 people have been arrested today, which is the largest number of protesters in a single day since protests began on June 9th.
So what else has the government said or done today?
Carrie Lam called a hasty press conference this morning where she did briefly speak to reporters, and she's pretty much held the same line. She's characterized the protests as largely the work of violent people. She said that they were using this extradition bill to China basically as a pretext to wreak havoc. She sort of echoed somewhat the line of Beijing, which is this is the work of foreign forces, but she didn't come out quite directly and say that. But she did question their motives, and she has continued to hold the line that they simply misunderstand what this law was supposed to be about and that they've smeared the government.
What's expected in the coming days? Will there be more protests this week, or is there any attempt to bring the two sides together to talk and to mediate?
Well, we've seen three straight days of protests in Hong Kong, and I think that we will see them continue later this week. Basically, the Hong Kong government is between a rock and a hard place. They cannot back down. It's widely believed that Beijing is now calling the shots and that Carrie Lam is basically a lame duck. So there is really no one to negotiate with. It would look very bad for Beijing if they were to show that they will respond to mass protests. It's uncertain what would actually happen in mainland China if that were to be the case. Protesters, however, are as determined as ever. I think they view this as sort of the last fight to save Hong Kong. This weekend, I spoke to dozens of people, and they all said the same thing, that protests will continue until their demands are met. But Carrie Lam has pretty much said that's not going to happen. The protests have actually started to change tactics, which are making it much harder for, I think, the media to keep track of, because their new tactic is they sort of flare up in one location. They build a bunch of barricades to keep the police out. And then most of the people will run into the subway system or sort of disappear into the side streets, and then they turn up somewhere else. And this is being directed over Telegram.
Particularly if it ever does slow down.
That was Erin Hale reporting from Hong Kong, speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. The Chinese-controlled territory is facing its worst political crisis since British colonial rule ended in 1997. It began 9 weeks ago with protests against an extradition bill, now suspended, that would have allowed people to be sent to mainland China for trial, and has since evolved into calls for greater democracy. Well, South Korea and the United States have begun annual military exercises despite warnings from Pyongyang that the war games will hamper nuclear negotiations between the United States and North Korea. Ahead of the exercises, North Korea ramped up its weapons tests. U.S. President Donald Trump and the North's leader Kim Jong-un held a historic meeting in Singapore last year when Kim pledged to work toward denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. But their meeting in February broke up over disagreement on what North Korea would give up for sanctions relief. Trump and Kim agreed to revive talks at their brief impromptu June meeting. So far, no formal steps toward new talks have been announced. William Gallo is VOA's Seoul correspondent. He spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson earlier today about the significance of the new military exercises.
Well, these are about as quiet of joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises as you could ever expect. There was no formal announcement today on the U.S. side. South Korea's defense minister told Parliament, in fact, that these military exercises began today. But other than that, you would hardly know that they happened. These are lasting for around half a month, and they will at least start with computer-simulated exercise. So not really some of the big flashes and bangs and bombs being dropped and things like that. This is very low-key, scaled-back exercises, but it's meant to sort of simulate the retaking of wartime operational control of South Korea from the United States.
All right. Now, how has North Korea been talking about these exercises? What have they been doing? How are they reacting?
Well, for several weeks now, they've been complaining about these upcoming exercises, saying that if they go ahead, if the U.S. and South Korea go ahead with these exercises, they not only will continue to test short-range missiles, but they've hinted that possibly they could resume nuclear and ICBM tests. Now, it's not clear we're anywhere near that point right now. North Korea has tested several short-range ballistic missiles. These go from anywhere from about 150 kilometers to 600 kilometers, so definitely on the short-range side of things. But they are ballistic missiles, and they're getting a bit more complicated. And you know, there's this sense that North Korea is sort of inching its way, slowly ramping up the provocations as it sees the U.S. and South Korea undertake these military exercises.
The new U.S. Secretary of Defense, Mr. Esper, is in the region and will be visiting Seoul in the coming days. Is there any indication he's working or will be working with the South Korean government on moving forward talks with North Korea on denuclearization?
He'll come here and presumably try to get things started, but it's not really clear that these North Korean talks can be moved forward at this point. I mean, North Korea is not showing up to talks. Even some talks. Can I restart that, actually?
Sure, yeah.
At the point where I think, yeah.
Okay, go ahead. I'll cut that out.
Sure. It's not really clear that the North Korean talks can be moved forward without the participation of North Korea, to be honest. North Korea has not given any sign that it wants to engage in working-level talks, and presumably it would not do so during the present U.S.-South Korea military drill.
That was correspondent William Gallo in Seoul speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. This is VOA's International Edition.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
Among the top stories in the world, Sudan's Transitional Military Council and the opposition coalition finalized a power-sharing agreement yesterday. Egyptian officials say 20 people were killed and 30 injured when a vehicle crashed and exploded in Cairo. A strike planned for London's Heathrow Airport is on hold while union officials take a pay offer to their members. And Puerto Rico's Senate filed suit today seeking to oust a veteran politician recently sworn in as the island's governor. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is VOA's International Edition. A look at more developments as Americans reel from two mass shootings over the weekend in which 29 people die. Law enforcement officials in Dayton, Ohio and El Paso, Texas today said the toll could have been much higher. In 30 seconds, the suspected gunman in the state of Ohio killed 9 people before police officers killed him. Investigators say he had hundreds of rounds of powerful gun ammunition. And in Texas, the suspect there, who has been arrested, killed 20 people in moments at a shopping center. Shortly before his attack, the suspect apparently posted an angry anti-immigrant rant online. Today, U.S. President Donald Trump condemned racism in his response to the shootings. Sagar Magani with the Associated Press reports from the White House.
The president says the nation's gripped by shock, horror, and sorrow after the killings of 29 people in El Paso and Dayton.
These barbaric slaughters.
And with mass shootings happening over and over, he vows the nation will act with urgent resolve. This morning, he tweeted about wanting stricter gun control laws, specifically stronger background checks. Speaking later here at the White House, he gave no details. The president says the nation must unite to condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy.
Sinister ideologies must be defeated. Hate has no place in America.
And called for the death penalty for those who commit hate crimes and mass murders. Sagar Magani at the White House.
This weekend, tune in to Music Time in Africa. I'm Heather Maxwell. Hey, everybody. I've got an exciting playlist from Kenya, Ethiopia, South Sudan, South Africa, Cameroon, Togo, Guinea, Nigeria, Senegal, Ghana, and the diaspora. You'll also meet Kenyan DJ Greg Tendwa and hear some samples from his new album, Benga Belt Volume 1.
So the song Mami is a dedication to the struggles that mothers go through. It's Mami, Mami, Mama.
Song of the Week from Ethiopia is Nafkot, a nostalgic tune by the legendary songstress Aster Aweke. So don't miss it. Music Time in Africa, 15:05 and 20:05 Universal Time.
India's Hindu nationalist government today scrapped the special autonomous status given to Kashmir for decades, sparking fears of a backlash in its only Muslim-majority region. Home Minister Amit Shah told Parliament the president had signed a decree abolishing Article 370. That constitutional article allowed the state to make its own laws and have independence all over matters except foreign affairs, defense, and communications. Pakistan condemned the measure on what it called the internationally recognized disputed territory. The country's foreign ministry said Pakistan will exercise all possible options to counter the illegal steps. Kashmir is divided between India and Pakistan, but claimed in full by both. It has been the trigger for two of the three wars between the countries. Indian opposition parties slammed the move as unconstitutional. The new measures effectively put New Delhi in charge of the region, which since 1989 has witnessed a separatist uprising that has left tens of thousands dead. Well, Britain says it will work with the United States in a new international effort to protect merchant shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. has been asking its allies to take part in a naval mission to protect shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, though European nations have been reluctant. Well, today Germany declined to join the U.S.-led effort, saying it preferred a EU plan. Earlier today, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif criticized the recent U.S. sanctions against him, calling the move a failure for diplomacy. Charles de Ledesma with the Associated Press has more.
Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has lambasted recent U.S. financial sanctions against him, calling the move a failure for diplomacy amid escalating tensions in the Persian Gulf. Zarif said the sanctions also meant the side imposing the measures is opposing talks. Zarif stressed that while there are no problems between the American and the Iranian people, Washington's policy of threatening war and talking about war as an option that remains on the table cannot stand. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Technology that taps into the power of the mind is helping quadriplegics and amputees regain some of what they've lost, Faith Lapidus reports. And in Austria, some commuters say a plan to improve their subway rides leaves them sniffing. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has more. Okay, we are having some technical problems. You're listening to VOA's International Edition.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs, such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
And now we go back to our report in Austria. Some commuters say a plan to improve their subway rides leaves them sniffing. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
A festival celebrating more than 50,000 years of Aboriginal culture in Australia's Northern Territory is addressing controversial political and social problems affecting Indigenous peoples. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports. First Nation leaders are calling for a new Indigenous advisory body to advise federal parliament on laws and issues affecting Australia's original inhabitants. While it has the support of many lawmakers, the idea has been rejected by some conservative politicians as an unwanted third chamber of parliament. Australia's centre-right government has, however, promised to hold a referendum within 3 years on official recognition of Indigenous people in the nation's constitution. Senior politicians have met with some of Australia's most influential First Nation leaders at the Garma Festival in the Northern Territory on sacred land belonging to the Yolngu people in Arnhem Land. The annual event began more than 20 years ago and has become a symbol of Indigenous pride and culture, as well as political activism. Aboriginal Australians suffer high rates of ill health, unemployment and poverty. Poor housing is another significant problem, according to Pat Turner from the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation.
We've still got communities that don't have proper, healthy, potable water supplies, have decent housing. We want housing for health. We don't want overcrowding. We go with our begging bowl every year and we get the crumbs off the table and we're expected to be grateful.
The Garma Festival in Australia's Northern Territory has also heard that mining companies are facing compensation claims over allegations they've been destroying Aboriginal sacred sites that tell the story of creation. Indigenous peoples consider the earth as the mother of creation and believe the land is full of secrets and wisdom. Aboriginal spirituality is known as the dreaming and is passed between generations through stories, song, art and dance. Australia's Indigenous communities have one of the richest and oldest continuing cultures anywhere in the world. They've lived in Australia for at least 60,000 years. Indigenous Australians make up about 3% of the national population. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is VOA's International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute. Astronomers from the Astronomical Observatory of the University of Warsaw have created a new three-dimensional map of the Milky Way, which they say provides an understanding of the structure and history of our galaxy. The new map shows that the Milky Way isn't flat, as had been thought, but is noticeably warped at its edges. The astronomers constructed the 3D map by studying data from 2,400 Cepheid stars that had been gathered by ground-based telescopes. Cepheids, also called Cepheid variables, are a class of supergiant stars that brighten and dim in a regular cycle. Radek Bolesky, formerly of the University of Warsaw and now at the University of Ohio, is one of the map creators. He says the problem astronomers have in studying the Milky Way is because we live in it and can't observe all of it from outside the galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, technology that taps into the power of the mind is helping quadriplegics and amputees regain some of what they've lost. Faith Lapidus reports.
Kevin Walgamott has a prosthetic arm that looks like something out of a Star Wars movie. That's because the Luke arm was inspired by Luke Skywalker's robotic arm from the film The Empire Strikes Back. Walgamott lost his left hand and part of his arm in an electrical accident 17 years ago. He's one of seven amputees at the University of Utah testing the Luke arm, which allows people to use their minds to perform delicate tasks, such as picking up and putting down an egg. The Luke arm has been in development for 15 years. The latest refinement connects it to the nerves in the wearer's forearm, which relay information to their brain so they can feel objects. That allows them to know how hard to grip something, whether they're plucking grapes or shaking their wife's hand. Scientists at ETH Zurich in Switzerland have developed a system which allows people with severely impaired motor functions to control video games just by thinking.
I'm trying to move my hand, my fingers, in my mind, so I have to be very concentrated.
Samuel Kunz, who was paralyzed after an accident, is taking part in a trial of the brain-computer interface to pilot a digital race car.
The connection between my fingers and my brain is not there anymore. I still try to move my fingers in my head, and so that needs a lot of concentration to do it exactly the same way every time.
Imagining moving his left hand makes the car turn left. Thinking about moving his right hand turns the car right. And thinking about moving both together makes it go straight. A fourth command, fully relaxing and clearing his mind, slows the car down. Those signals are transmitted to a computer via electrodes placed on his head.
What we actually need for a brain-computer face is an amplifier, a cap with electrodes, which actually measure Sammy's or our pilot's brain signals. The brain signal is a very, very small signal, and muscle activity is a very, very strong signal. So we need to make sure that we filter out any muscle activity, that what we have left is the pure brain signal.
Kunz is practicing his mind control of the game so he can take part in a special championship next year called Cybathlon, in which people with physical disabilities compete against each other using state-of-the-art technology. The inaugural competition was held in Zurich in 2016. The technology's biggest challenge is decoding complex brain signals using non-invasive sensors. So the next generation will probably involve sensors and electrodes implanted directly into the brain. The ultimate aim of the research is to allow those with limited movement to control devices such as wheelchairs with the power of their mind. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
In Austria, some commuters say a plan to improve their subway rides leaves them sniffing. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
The Austrian capital's transport authority has tried out four scents, including hints of green tea, grapefruit, sandalwood and melon, in the ventilation systems of four trains on two of the network's five lines. After a survey, the authority has found 21,000 people have decided they would prefer to live without scent as they commute, while 16,000 supported extending the perfume project. Maybe the odours aren't too bad as it stands, officials say. The air quality in their subway cars has already been improved by a ban on eating that was introduced on all lines in January. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Thank you, Charles. You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Daniel Brown, and our engineer, John Dryden. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.